Blythe Connor knows something most mothers never admit, that the instant, overwhelming love for your child isn't guaranteed. Her own childhood taught her this brutal lesson. Her grandmother, Etta, widowed while pregnant during a Kentucky blizzard, held her daughter, Cecilia, underwater in the bathtub until bubbles stopped rising, pulling her up at the last possible moment. Years later, Cecilia abandoned young Blythe with nothing but a note on the kitchen counter. "I don't want you learning to be like me," Cecilia once told Blythe, "but I don't know how to teach you to be anyone different." When Blythe becomes pregnant, she's determined to break this cycle. She immerses herself in pregnancy books and nursery preparations, imagining tender bedtime moments and first steps. But as her daughter Violet enters the world, that magical maternal connection never materializes. Instead, Blythe feels dread and disconnection. "Violet cried only when she was with me. It felt like a betrayal," she observes. "We were supposed to want each other." As Violet grows, Blythe notices disturbing behaviors, refusing to be held, seeming to prefer her father, Fox, displaying what Blythe perceives as calculated coldness. The question haunts her: is something wrong with Violet, or is Blythe simply repeating her family's broken pattern? From the outside, Blythe and Fox's relationship appeared flawless. Fox brought fresh flowers, remembered her preferences, and planned elaborate dates. Their early marriage featured homemade pasta dinners, afternoon wine on their balcony, and passionate intimacy. Beneath this veneer lay Blythe's desperate need to appear perfect. She meticulously curated their home, obsessed over entertaining, and maintained an immaculate appearance. She hid her dysfunctional family history, later admitting, "I couldn't risk you knowing how broken my family was." This facade crumbles after Violet's birth. As Blythe struggles with motherhood, Fox's supportive nature erodes. He dismisses her concerns about Violet's troubling behavior, her unsettling stares, unusual silence around children, and apparent pleasure in others' pain. "You're anxious. She can sense it," he insists, when Violet won't stop crying. Their marriage dies in small, deliberate ways. Long pauses before answering questions, closed bathroom doors, bringing home just one coffee instead of two. Blythe recalls their pre-Violet life, spontaneous weekend trips, lingering coffee conversations, late dinners with friends. Life was less visceral, with ideas brighter and words flowing easier. Violet's birth shatters this reality. The physical toll hits immediately. Breasts like cement, razor blade gums on nipples, blood-stained sheets. Her body becomes foreign, leaking, aching, desperately sleep-deprived. Worse is her emotional alienation instead of maternal bliss. When Violet cries incessantly, Blythe thinks, "Please, go away." This gap between expectation and reality extends socially. In mothers' groups, her admission of difficulty is met with quick assertions that it's all worth it without vulnerability. Their Instagram-perfect lives deepen her isolation. Only once does she meet another mother who admits, "Motherhood feels like something that happened to us rather than an accomplishment." Society constantly idealizes motherhood: glowing pregnant women on magazines, peaceful nursery posts, advice about natural maternal instincts, while countless women suffer silently, believing they're alone in their struggle. What if a mother doesn't love her child? These thoughts plague Blythe, who admits, "These are thoughts I never spoke aloud, thoughts most mothers don't have." As Violet grows, disturbing incidents accumulate. Her teacher reports she twisted a boy's fingers and stabbed another child. Blythe finds hair in Violet's pocket. When neighborhood boy Elijah dies falling from playground equipment, Blythe suspects Violet's involvement. With the birth of Sam, Blythe finally experiences the maternal bond she craved. "He would lift his head from between my breasts, wobbling as he searched for me, and when I put my cheek to his, he would rest again, safe, happy, full of milk and me." Then Sam dies after his stroller rolls into traffic. Blythe becomes convinced Violet pushed it, her grief consuming her while her relationship with Violet deteriorates. Society expects maternal love to be automatic, but what happens when fear replaces affection? The novel confronts this uncomfortable reality many mothers experience but rarely discuss. Is Violet truly disturbed? Or is Blythe projecting her fears onto an ordinary child? This question haunts both Blythe and the reader throughout the novel. Evidence supporting Blythe's concerns seems substantial. Reports of Violet hurting children without remorse, the hair in her pocket, Blythe's belief that Violet caused both Elijah's and Sam's deaths. Yet alternative explanations exist for each incident. The preschool behaviors could be normal childhood aggression. The hair might have come from helping clean up. And at Sam's death site, the steeper curb suggests the stroller could have rolled naturally. Others consistently see Violet differently. Fox defends his daughter. There's nothing wrong with her. His mother acknowledges only a bit of a temper. Even Gemma, Fox's new wife, forms a loving bond with Violet, telling Blythe, "She didn't push Sam. I know you believe she did, but you've made it up." The novel's final scene maintains this ambiguity. When Blythe thinks she sees Violet mouth, "I push him," we must decide whether this is a confession or Blythe's desperate need for confirmation. The push portrays trauma cascading through generations. From Etta's abuse of Cecilia, to Cecilia's inability to mother Blythe, to Blythe's struggles with Violet. Despite determination to be different, Blythe mirrors her mother's behaviors, emotional distance, neglect, and thoughts of escape. Her attempts to connect with Violet feel forced rather than instinctive. "We kept busy, and I kept quiet." Sam's birth temporarily breaks this pattern. With him, Blythe experiences the natural maternal bond absent with Violet, suggesting the cycle isn't predetermined. With a different child, Blythe can become the mother she aspired to be. The novel's most affecting moment comes when Blythe imagines a loving bond with Violet. "She nurses until she turns one. I'm fueled by her hot skin against mine. I'm happy, grateful, not crying when I'm near her." Breaking the cycle requires more than intention. It demands awareness, support, and sometimes professional help. Despite its darkness, The Push ultimately offers a tentative path toward healing. After years of blaming Violet, Blythe begins a journey toward acceptance. This process begins when she revisits the accident scene, noticing the steeper-than-remembered curb that makes her question Violet's guilt. The coffee shop owner's mention of how Violet clung to your waist afterward forces Blythe to confront how grief may have distorted her memory. Blythe acknowledges her role in their dysfunction, telling Violet, "I want you to feel loved by someone you trust, and that person doesn't have to be me," prioritizing her daughter's needs over her desire for connection. The epilogue shows Blythe working on her mental health through meditation and affirmations. Though her joys remain measured, she keeps the front light on in case her daughter decides it's finally time to see her. Healing doesn't require perfect resolution, but living with imperfections. We can't escape our past, but we can live with greater self-awareness and perhaps loosen trauma's grip on the next generation.